It is coming up on 17 minutes after 8 o'clock, and you're listening to Saskatchewan Weekend on CBC Radio 1. I'm Shauna Powers. Austin Eade has been actively involved in the Crake community for many years, and you can definitely see his contributions almost everywhere you look. You'll understand what I mean once you hear him describe a project he's been working on for literally decades. As we sat in the sacred space outside the town's eco center, I asked Austin how he's helped shape the view we saw as we looked across the valley.
When we look across the valley, or through the valley even, there's a number of trees that are growing along the edge of the golf course and on the golf course, plus down the valley on both sides. It's been a hobby of mine, I guess you could say, over the last 30, 35 years of just getting out, going for a walk down the valley, but taking a bag of trees with you and planting as I go. And for the first 10,000 trees, I kept track. And I actually have a book at home that tells me which days I planted and where I planted them. And I actually quit keeping track about 15 or 20 years ago. So I would estimate I've planted probably close to 25,000 trees out here somewhere. And that's trees, that's transplanted trees, that's not seedlings or seeds, young trees.
That sounds like a bit more than a hobby. 25,000 trees, wow.
I like being out of doors and planting a tree. I don't think you can go too far wrong with that.
What kind of impact have you seen in terms of the species that are choosing to come through this region as a result of these trees?
That's very true. A couple years ago, we've had a tough winter, a lot of snow, a lot of cold temperatures. And we have a little piece of land up on top of the Valley Hill that we've planted a lot of poplar trees and other sources of trees. And we had about 100 deer that called that home through the winter just because of the shelter and the food sources there. So, and it's kind of exciting to see that many deer or that much wildlife coming to an area that previously was either a stubble crop or a piece of grassland, and now it's shelter to wildlife. And we can notice every year there's birds, different birds, more birds than the year before because the trees are maturing and seeing how it's evolving into something that maybe wasn't here before, wouldn't have been here without the efforts.
When you think about the land itself, can you talk to me about some of the physical benefits for the land to have that kind of tree coverage?
Well, the piece of land that we did buy is quite marginal land. There's a lot of rock on it. It's very poor soil. And by planting the trees on there, I believe we've stabilized a lot of the soil that maybe otherwise would have been in the reservoir. And the cycle that a tree goes through by shedding its leaves and refurbishing the soil. And we can notice a difference. Like, we've been at it. It was 2005 when we put the poplar bluff up on the hill. And we can notice quite a difference on the soil itself inside the bluff, you know, where the leaves have been recycling back into the soil. And over time, like I had one person tell me, that's a 100-year program. But I can argue with them now because it's only 90 year now because we've been at it for 10.
Hopefully you'll be around for at least 20 more of those 90 years.
Well, if we're not, somebody definitely will get some enjoyment out of it. That's the thing about it. I don't think it's a selfish program because it is something for the next generation too.
Now, I'm going to change my orientation a little bit here and look out in the other direction because I understand that this dugout house that I've heard from a couple people about this morning is your creation. And we can see, well, tell us what we can see from here.
Well, sitting at the sacred site, it's pretty hard to see the dugout house and barn, but you can see the roof of the barn from here. But again, that all come about because of planting trees, because I was over in that section of ground planting the area to some trees, and I happened to stumble across the old imprint of the house. I asked Shirley if she had an uncle that lived east of Craig, if she would inquire if there was any history of a building being there or anything. And he said, yes, there was a house there, and it was derelict. He can remember coming over. There's a wagon trail there as well that goes beside the dugout house. And he said he can remember coming over that trail with his father when he was just a young, very young boy, and it was a derelict house at that time. Well, now there's nothing more, when I found that there was nothing much more than an imprint in the soil. So we figure it was probably put there back in the 1800s. And the way it was constructed, it's dug into the side hill. And the dirt that's removed from there formed one wall on the front. And so the east wall and the bit of the south wall where the door entrance is, the west wall was where the window was, that you can tell by the structure of the dirt. And so what we did is reconstructed what we interpreted was there at the time, up from the original imprint. The original imprint is still there. And as far as I know, it's the only reconstructed dugout house in probably Western Canada. I think the thing that's really, really excited me is when you look at the dugout house, you know, this goes back 100+ years that it was constructed. And then we're sitting right next to the Eco Center, which is constructed basically with the same intention. You know, face it south, collect the natural passive energy, the window in the west, so that collects the natural light in the evening when you got time to sit and read a book or whatever you may be doing there. It's set into the hillside to get that passive heat from the soil. The roof of the building was covered with dirt, so, you know, it's conserve energy, I guess, is the bottom line. And when you look at it and visualize, and I've always felt that I was born 100 years too late anyway, but when you look at it and think of the dreams and the excitement and the pioneering experience that went along with that house, it's quite exciting.
When you take visitors through the house, or when, you know, people come in and see the house, what do you hope that it is that they get out of the experience?
As much as anything, I think what you really want, or what I really want to do, is leave the impression that our forefathers and the people before us went to a lot of work to develop to what we have today, and it's time, or I'd like to see people appreciate what we got today. And I don't mean just your house. I mean nature, the ground we're on, the view we have from here. You know, this was developed by people before us, and, you know, give it a moment to appreciate what they've really, the efforts that they've really put into developing the area.
Austin Ead built a dugout house near the town of Craik. If you want to visit the house, you can contact the Craik Regional Park. Austin has also planted about 25,000 trees in the area over the last 3 decades. Austin isn't the only area resident who understands the value of trees. Davidson farmer Peter Farden spent quite a bit of time driving me around the area. As we drove, he reminded me of how interconnected we all are, and he used a piece of local farmland that flooded with this year's rain as a way of illustrating that point.
Okay, this piece of land is very sandy. It's kind of fragile. The farmer that's on it is a very good farmer, and he's taking absolute extreme measures to try to keep it intact. This land hasn't blown for 30 years, but we had all that bad rain, and it just cut a channel through here. You can see what it did to his crop, and then the ravine it cut. And it cut through there. And this has been continuous crop for a whole lot of years. And
looks like a river flowed through it.
It was. It actually came over the road here a bit. Any chemicals or any kind of soluble stuff that was be picked up off this land has gone down the Arm River. And it is going to end up in Lake Winnipeg. And so way out here, we are connected to the big picture. And they're saying that we've really got to start taking precautions, or really being concerned about the health of the of Lake Winnipeg. And so it starts here. And so we cannot continue to keep on trenching the water to the downhill and just thinking it's out of here. We have to start thinking in a responsible way of husbandry throughout here. And the farmer is on the land and he has to try to make a living. It isn't just up to that individual farmer to be responsible for that water. Somehow or other, those sloughs, which are a very significant value to the community and to the country at large, the responsibility for that slough and the economics of it have got to be spread over the population and, or the country in total. We have to start paying to keep some of these trees out here, some of the bluffs around the sloughs. It's all habitat and it's all worth something. When we start getting down to having less oil and we're looking for biomass, all of those trees around those sloughs, we could take 10% of them a year and still have a healthy slough. In fact, it would improve the bluffs around the sloughs. We have done experiments with that. We've taken out 10%. I think you can take out more than 10%. And within just 3 or 4 years, they're back.
Wow. What are some other things that you've done when, as a farmer yourself, and you're understanding that the connections are made between this particular area that we are and Lake Winnipeg and so many other areas? What are some of the things that you've done to be mindful, I guess, of that interconnectedness?
What we have done is that we've not removed, as we've built the size of our farm, the old growth forests that are around those old farmsteads are still there. It's a really tough choice. If you're a big farmer and those trees are in the road, they got to go if you can't get between them. There are a whole lot of things that we're exploring that you might be able to do. There are people that would be willing to come out and plant trees and expand that bluff and cultivate those trees and share the profits. If you put the economics in place, there are a whole lot of things that can be done in the future, just if there's a willingness to do them.
As Peter Farden and I drove a little further up that road, he stopped by a slough on his farmland to further explain the important role trees can play.
We used to farm through these sloughs, and then I let the trees grow in there. I would only get into that slough maybe 50% of the time. And you can see where the crop is. We couldn't get in this year because it's incredibly wet. But usually we farm right up to that slough. And if those trees weren't there, the loss of land would be as big as that ring because of the salinity and the alkali. So as the water goes down and the trees take the water out, it gives a chance for the alkali to percolate down into the lower layers. And instead of the bathtub ring, we've actually, those trees are gaining us land rather than taking them out and then having the perception that we've got a full quarter section of solid field, which we wouldn't have.
So it's about letting nature actually help you do your job.
Right. And there's always a balance in there. The ideal thing from modern agronomics would take the trees out, fill the slough, and trench it over onto somebody else's land. But now what we've got is habitat in there. We've got really good crop right next to that. Instead of taking the water out, we're allowing guarantee of moisture in there. And on a poor year, around those trees, I've got crop up to my waist. Really, on a net balance, the trees are a gain to a grain farmer. Not always, but definitely I believe that they are.
Peter Farden was my tour guide through the back roads near his farm around Davidson.